Dozens of possible Dyson spheres discovered all over our galaxy. Did Russia and the US collaborate in developing modern secret space programs? Lou Elizondo believes that his UFO disclosures have made him a target for covert assassination. Jason Sands, a 22-year US Air Force veteran, discusses an attempt to recruit him for a UFO crash retrieval program. Professor Haim Eshed's claims about a galactic federation are not crazy, according to a Harvard astronomer. Lithuania becomes the 40th nation to sign the Artemis Accords, taking us one small step closer to a Star Trek future. These and other stories in Exopolitics Today, the Week in Review.
You're listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala, your source for the uncensored truth regarding the human, extraterrestrial, global, and political agenda. Click the like button and subscribe to this channel. And now, here's Dr. Michael Sala.
Welcome to this edition, the May 18 edition of Exopolitics Today, the Week in Review. I'm still doing field research in Egypt. I'm traveling, as you can see from my background. I'm in a hotel, but I'm very glad to be able to cover this week in review and give you a little bit of an update on what I'm seeing in Egypt, touring some of the sites here. But let's begin with this story from JP. He actually did a YouTube video. He has a YouTube channel, and he uploaded a short video where he describes one of the missions that I discussed in Volume 1 of US Army Insider Missions, and this is his mission to Jupiter to greet extraterrestrial visitors. He was part of a fleet of craft that were organized by US Space Command to meet with extraterrestrials that arrived in 2021. I believe it was in October of 2021, where he was part of this multinational mission to greet these visitors that parked themselves around Jupiter. So he did a short YouTube video discussing some of the details about that. He provided a little more detail than what I discussed and released in the book. Okay, so here's a very interesting story in the New Scientist, and there's data that is presented from the James Webb Space Telescope and other sources where scientists believe that there's evidence for dozens of stars that are actually covered by these Dyson spheres. So Dyson spheres are a theoretical construct that Freeman Dyson, a top astronomer, theorized that that extraterrestrial civilizations, as they develop, they can start to harness the energies of a star by developing these huge Dyson spheres around the star. So that would be an effective way of harnessing the energy of a star for all sorts of purposes by a type 2 civilization. And so astronomers using data from the James Webb Space Telescope, they have been able to deduce that there are stars out there that show indications of being Dyson spheres. So that's a very interesting development. And I think this is a classic form of a techno signature. And so there's a lot of theories that once biosignatures are discovered and confirmed. The James Webb Space Telescope has already discovered biosignatures on an exoplanet, but because those biosignatures have not been confirmed, they are waiting for a second round of data for when that exoplanet transits across its sun to be able to confirm those biosignatures. So they're now waiting to confirm the biosignatures. But in the meantime, there are possible techno signatures, as we are witnessing now, coming through the James Webb Space Telescope. So I think this is going to be a way in which disclosure can happen. First, there'll be biosignatures detected and confirmed, and then there will be techno signatures such as a Dyson sphere, which will be are detected and then confirmed. So I think this is what we face in the months and years ahead with the James Webb Space Telescope. So did Russia and the US collaborate in developing modern secret space programs? So these are the highlights from my May 4th webinar that I did on Crowdcast. So you can watch the highlights. They go for about 30 minutes. It's available for free on YouTube. And so you can get to see a little bit about the collaboration between the US and the USSR when it came to dealing with Nazi Germany's secret space program that was relocated from occupied Europe to Antarctica, Greenland, and South America. That even though on the one hand, the Second World War came to an end, but on the other hand, the Second World War continued, and Russia, the US, Britain, France, and other countries continued to collaborate in dealing with the Nazis or the Germans that were now operating out of Antarctica. But this time they had advanced space weapons. So Jason Sands is a 22-year US Air Force veteran, and he did an interview, and in this interview, he discussed how there was an attempt to recruit him for a UFO crash retrieval program. And so I thought it was very interesting because Jason Sands served for 22 years in the US Air Force and says that they tried to recruit him for this. And he had also revealed that he was part of a secret space program. Now, what I thought was very interesting about this attempt to recruit him for a UFO crash retrieval program is that this is exactly what happened to Clifford Stone, who was also a 22-year veteran for the U.S. military. This time, Stone says that he served with the U.S. Army for 22 years, and then he was taken on covert missions for the U.S. Air Force. Now, so this is what he says happened to him, and it's interesting that Jason Sands says that he was recruited, they attempted to recruit him for a similar crash retrieval program. I should mention here that JP currently serves with the US Army, and when he's taken away for TDYs, that's temporary duty assignments, he is taken with this covert US Air Force unit that recruited him or asked him to join the US military. And so even though JP serves with the US Army, when he's taken on these covert missions, he is taken to serve with these covert US Air Force operatives. Okay, so here's Lou Elizondo, and he believes that his UFO disclosures have made him a target for covert assassination. So is this just drama to gain attention for an upcoming book, which some skeptics claim, or is it a genuine concern by a whistleblower that knows too much and has become a target for those that want to silence him? Now, you know, Lou Elizondo is a very interesting figure. I mean, there is a lot of controversy around him. I mean, the controversy comes from, well, there's two sides of the controversy. Well, on the one hand, there's controversy over, say, debunkers who want, basically, they nitpick over his credentials. They find anomalies or inconsistencies in his credentials, and they say, well, the guy's lying, and so why would you believe a liar? Because he maybe didn't cross his T's and dot his I's properly. And I don't take those kinds of criticisms very seriously because, you know, this is a way for debunkers to take down credible whistleblowers. And I think Lou Elizondo is a credible whistleblower. I think he did head up this ATIP program, this Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. He did head that up, and he was running that for a few years. People will nitpick as to whether or not this was a funded program or it was an unfunded program run by Elizondo. I think he's very credible in terms of him running that program. And I think he probably was upset that he wasn't being taken seriously, and then left the program in 2017. And that's when the news started to filter out, and information started to leak out. Now, on the other hand, the criticism of Elizondo is that he's part of a limited hangout. And what that means is that Elizondo is pushing this threat narrative. And the threat narrative is one that, well, we don't know what UFOs are. They could be a possible threat. You know, that way we need to get more funding to study UFOs, and that kind of, that pushing that threat narrative leads to concerns over whether or not Elizondo and others are part of his attempt to set up a Project Bluebeam in the future. So in that, on those grounds, I tend to think that, well, it's quite possible that he is part of a limited hangout. And I think there are many others that are former intelligence operatives who are pushing this threat narrative. And they are doing that because there is an attempt by the deep state to set the ground to create a possible false flag alien event. So that's a very possible scenario. And so that gives us a little more context now for what Lou Elizondo claims, that he is a target for covert assassination. On the one hand, I think he knows quite a bit, and so that may be why he believes he is why he's a target for possible assassination. But on the other hand, this could be part of the PSYOP. This could be part of this attempt to use former intelligence assets or agents or operatives such as Elizondo and quite a few others to set up a threat narrative that gets the public to buy into this idea that UFOs are a threat, so that if the deep state does decide to roll out a false flag alien event, then there'll be people like Elizondo around to give credence to that. Okay, so here's a very interesting interview that Professor Avi Loeb did with Ross Coltart, the Australian journalist. And in that interview, he was asked whether or not Haim Eshed, who is a former professor and founder of Israel's space program, whether his claims regarding things such as a galactic federation that extraterrestrials are visiting us are genuine or not. And Avi Loeb says that, well, that Haim Eshed is actually a very serious guy, and that he's not being frivolous or stupid or crazy in making these claims. So this is very interesting, because what's happening here is that Avi Loeb gave an interview, Haim Eshed gave an interview for an Israeli magazine, and he was asked about a Galactic Federation, and he said that the Galactic Federation was working with the Trump administration, and that the Trump administration wanted to disclose the existence of extraterrestrials, but they were told by the Galactic Federation that humanity wasn't ready yet because our level of technology was not yet sufficiently advanced enough. So a lot of people said that Haim Eshed was crazy, lost his marbles and so forth after having such a long, distinguished career in setting up Israel's space program. But Avi Loeb, who's a former chair of Harvard's astronomy department, has spoken to Haim Eshed, and he says, no, the guy's not crazy at all. He's a very serious thinker, and that his claim shouldn't be dismissed. So that's very interesting. That gives credence to Haim Eshed's claims about a Galactic Federation helping the Trump administration. So that's very important, because there are those that I've been working with that claim that they are associated with a Galactic Federation. So here is a part one of a two-part series of a webinar I did in the first part of 2022 concerning world religions and extraterrestrial contact. So the entire webinar went for, I think it was about 2.5 hours. And so we've divided it up into two parts. The webinar was released on was conducted on August 13, 2022. And so you can watch it in two parts. And so this is the first part. The next part will be released next week. So it covers world religions, different religions, and how they deal with extraterrestrial contact. So I think it's very important at this time, especially as we are kind of dealing with attempts to create a Gog and Magog war, where prophecy in the Christian and Jewish traditions are used to foment and justify a kind of end times Gog and Magog war. So I think it helps to understand the role extraterrestrials have played in multiple religions. Okay, so here's a video that was done by the crypto viewing team, Dick Allgaier. Well, he did I don't even know if it was a remote viewing. I mean, he is a famous remote viewer. And what he did here was that he discussed this portrait of King Charles III. And he discussed that in the context of magic, that the elites use magic to control and manipulate humanity. And what he did here was that he showed how in this particular portrait, there is embedded within it some dark magic. And so what he observed and many others observed with this portrait is that there are elements on it such as a butterfly, which is often used by the occult, that when you placed it side by side, or you did a reverse image of it, if you split it in the middle and you placed it side by side, you have a figure appearing that looks like Baphomet. And here you have it. So there you have the image splitting. So you can see the image being split, reverse imaging is done. Apologies for that. And you have this reverse imaging done, and you have what appears to be an occult symbol of Baphomet. And so this is what Dick Allgaier points out as being an example of how magic is used by the elite for occult purposes to control us. So, yeah, very interesting picture. This video by Dick Allgaier only goes for a couple of minutes. So you get his take on ritual magic and how the elite use that to control humanity. Okay, so Lithuania becomes the 40th nation to sign the Artemis Accords, taking us a small step closer to a Star Trek future. Even though Lithuania is a tiny country, I think 4 million people. I mean, that's maybe not so tiny, but still a very small country in terms of world populations. It nevertheless has signed on to the Artemis Accords because it understands that the future is going to involve a lot of collaboration in space, and countries are lining up to join the US-based Artemis Accords because they understand that the future is going to be one where countries that have corporations that are actively present in operating in space, that's where there's going to be huge profits. So Lithuania is going to try to attract space corporations to use Lithuania to set up space programs. Space is the brand new frontier. The Artemis Accords are the civilian side of space exploration. And even though Lithuania, with only 4 million people, is a tiny country, in terms of it being any kind of military power. Still, it can use its territory to attract corporations that want a favorable nation to participate in space exploration. So this is where Lithuania hopes to be able to leverage the Artemis Accords to be able to participate in this incredible future that's coming towards us, which is a Star Trek future. And I've discussed the Star Trek future in webinars and in my two of my books. A Star Trek future is really what the military, the US military, wants to create. I've mentioned that Space Force and its predecessor, US Air Force Space Command, are actively committed to creating a Star Trek future by the year 2060. So this is not me just, you know, making this up. It is actually part of a space futures roadmap that Space Force's predecessor, Space Command, set up in 2019. Okay, so here's something that was set up. It's a bill set up by Congressman Tim Burchett, and this bill is actually House of Representatives, and it is called the, you might not be able to see it here, it's called the UAP Disclosure, Transparency Act, sorry. So what you can see this bill by just going to my Twitter feed and clicking the link here, and you can read this bill. And what this bill does is that it is trying to set up a UAP Transparency Act. And so this would basically require any national or any federal agency or department to release all files it has on UFOs. So this is something that was proposed by Congressman Tim Burchett. Now, you know, the problem with this particular bill, for it to become to be passed, even if it were passed, it requires all federal government agencies to declassify UFO-related documents. Now, there's two problems with this. Now, the first is that there's no discernible enforcement mechanism. So that means that any government agency that doesn't want to release its UFO files is not compelled to do so. This bill, if it were to be passed and become the UAP Transparency Act, there's no way to compel any government agency to release its UFO files. Now, this is a problem because what has already been shown to occur is that attempts by some government agencies to find out what's going on regarding UFOs, that they don't have the power to do it. So, for example, there was an attempt to set up a provisional special access program in the Department of Homeland Security, and that was called Kona Blue. It was a provisional SAP, and they could not get any other government agencies to release UFO-related files to them because they wanted to find out what was going on. So they didn't have any way of enforcing other agencies to release any of their UFO files. So this is the same thing. This is the same thing with this particular congressional bill. If it were to be passed, there would be no enforcement mechanism. Second, private corporations. I mean, these are the corporations that actually have special access programs that run or that deal with UFOs or deal with non-human intelligence. Now, they play the leading role in dealing with all issues concerning UFOs. So they can assert proprietary rights to any UFO-related program that they are running. And so that means that no congressional committee has the power to compel them to release anything concerning their UFO files because they can assert proprietary rights. Excuse me. So private corporations, they have the power to be able to assert proprietary rights over UFO information, and no government agency can extract that from them. And this was very well exemplified by the 1997 Admiral Thomas Wilson incident, where a vice director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, and he was also the deputy director of the Joint Intelligence Committee for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he was denied access to a special access program dealing with UFO reverse engineering that was run by a corporation. So that was in 1997. So similarly, the US Congress would also lack that kind of authority to compel a company to release UFO files who could simply assert proprietary jurisdiction over those. So those are the two main problems with this effort, with this attempt to create a UAP Disclosure Act. You really need a entity that can assert eminent domain, and that's what the UAP Disclosure Act for 2024 had before it was gutted in the US Congress in the latter part of 2023. So here is a couple of photos that I released about my tour in Egypt. And in this tour, what I'm finding is that there's a lot of temples, ancient temples, that have hieroglyphs, cartouches that show these humanoid beings that are having different facial features or display animal features. And I don't think this is myth. I mean, this has been something that has been discussed on many shows, Ancient Aliens. Eric von Daniken has discussed this at length. So, this is well known. But, here I am doing this research in Egypt, and I'm wanting to just focus on these kinds of hieroglyphs that show animal-headed gods, because what are they? I mean, are these mythological beings? Are they gods, or are they extraterrestrials that are kind of humanoid, but they are non-human? And this one in particular got my attention. This is the temple of Sobek at this location called Kom Ombo, and this is near the city of Aswan in the southern part of Egypt, or Upper Egypt. And Sobek was a benevolent crocodile-headed god, and he was helping human evolution. And so that intrigued me because what I saw at this temple, Kom Omba, wasn't just a crocodile-headed god. There were also lion-headed gods, there were bird-headed gods, and of course humans, human-headed gods, Osiris, Isis, and so forth. And what I saw at Kom Ombo was that this was actually a kind of an academy where these different extraterrestrial races came together. And so what I believe Kom Ombo represented was that this was a place, an academy of sorts, where you had higher learning, wisdom, healing, and all sorts of technologies were shared by different extraterrestrials with the human inhabitants of Egypt at that time, and with the pharaohs, with the priests, to help speed up human evolution. So this intrigues me because this is precisely what I think is the future of humanity. We are going to have many different extraterrestrial visitors showing up, revealing themselves, sharing their technologies to help speed up human evolution. I mean, this is exactly what JP says is happening in the covert programs. And he's met the ant people. He's met with Aquarian or aquatic extraterrestrial civilizations. And so I think this is our future. So I think it's very interesting to look at Egypt's ancient past and temples that show these non-human-looking extraterrestrials participating with humans from the ancient past and with human-looking extraterrestrials to share this advanced technology. So Sobek, the crocodile-headed god, I think is just one example of this. And here is another example that I showed an image of that I posted on my Twitter feed. And here I am with Anubis. Now, Anubis is described as the god of the underworld. And, of course, that's the mythology of Anubis. Now, what I see here is this dog-headed god. Now, to me, this is a canine form of extraterrestrial. Now, why do I say that? Well, many people have talked about Dog Man, and Dog Man is someone an extraterrestrial or form of life, a canine form of extraterrestrial. So just as you have reptilian forms of extraterrestrials, so Sobek is a reptilian form of extraterrestrial, and people have heard of the Draconians, and Sobek may belong to an earth-based form of benevolent extraterrestrials. So too you have these canine extraterrestrials these gods of the underworld, Anubis, that they may in fact represent this canine form of extraterrestrials that visited Earth. And I think that ancient Egypt was, based on what I've seen so far and what others have described, ancient Egypt was just filled with temples with these non-human-looking extraterrestrials that were collaborating with human pharaohs, human elites, human priests, along with their fellow extraterrestrials that were human-looking to help speed up human evolution on the planet or preserve it as much as possible. So I think there are many ancient secrets in Egypt that are shown on these hieroglyphs that show that humanity did at one point work with ancient extraterrestrial visitors. And I think that is our future as well. And that these temples, in a way, were academies, that they weren't just places of worship of gods. I think people have got it wrong there. I think that these temples, or many of them, were academies of places of higher learning where extraterrestrials, humans, priests, and so forth could share wisdom, could share healing modalities, could share technologies. And I think this is where we're heading now. And of course, the structures of these temples were used sacred geometry. And again, that is the sort of thing you would use in an academy, sacred geometry to kind of facilitate human evolution, facilitate the awakening of the chakra system, the awakening of the kundalini, where all the chakras are activated so that participants or students at these academies could absorb and learn the higher wisdom. So I think that the ancient Egyptian gods were not gods per se that would be worshipped at these temples. In fact, that these temples were places that were more in alignment with an academy where extraterrestrials, advanced enlightened humans and inner earth beings would come together and share their wisdom and technology and healing modalities. So this is what I found so far in my Egypt research. I am looking forward to reporting on other things that I'm finding in my next week in review. So that's it for today. I look forward to reporting on what I'm learning here in Egypt next time around, and in covering the latest developments on exopolitics in my next week in review. So I look forward to seeing you next week.
You have been listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe to this channel. Join or start a conversation in the comments. Take the time to explore the vast library of best-selling books, webinars, and podcasts by Dr. Sala. Visit exopoliticstoday.com.